You're listening to The Wake Up Reads with Alex Fetzi, the show where I read the best articles, excerpts, and essays in the world of Bitcoin, philosophy, and contrarian thinking. Hey everybody, welcome to Wake Up Read number 7. Today I've got a short one for you. It's an old Bitcoin essay, actually from Tuesday, the 7th of June in 2011. It's from a blog called The Monetary Future, and the subheading of the blog is At the Intersection of Free Banking, Cryptography, and Digital Currency. Now, this one is really interesting. It's called Bitcoin is the Economic Singularity, and the author is a guy named Ryan Dickherber. I mean, it's one of those names. I mean, the guy's fucking brilliant based on what he's actually picked up on Bitcoin. But still, if you're listening, Ryan, your name is fucking hilarious. Oh, you know, it's just one of those where I'm thinking of that meme, you know, that Indian guy who's trying not to laugh, but, you know, he just keeps smiling. So that's exactly how I feel right now. So anyway, I'm gonna read this article and then I'm gonna do a bit of an analysis. As I said, it's gonna be a short episode today. This is probably only a 5, maybe 10 minute read. So without, I guess, further ado, let's kick it off and let's then dig into it. So Bitcoin is the Economic Singularity by Ryan Dickherber, aka Astro Hacker, written on Saturday, June 4th, 2011. 3 weeks ago, I discovered Bitcoin. It sounded interesting enough that I decided to devote an entire Saturday to it. That was my day of Bitcoin. My day of Bitcoin evolved into my 3 weeks of Bitcoin. In that time, I've been obsessively reading about it, writing about it, buying it, and creating businesses for it. As far as I can recall, I've never been so obsessed about anything. But the reason I am obsessed with Bitcoin is simple. It is the most incredible thing to ever happen in the world. I'm not exaggerating. We are presently witnessing the most disruptive change to ever happen to collective human behavior. Although there have been other disruptive changes to human behavior in the past, Bitcoin is happening much faster than those. Consider, for instance, computing. Charles Babbage invented the mechanical analytical engine in the 1830s. It took on the order of a century or more before those seeds of an idea blossomed into something that actually started being used on a large scale. Or consider, say, the internet, which was invented in the 1960s, but took on the order of decades before it saturated the world. That was faster than computing, but still long compared to Bitcoin. Bitcoin was only invented about 2.5 years ago, and already I've been able to ask random people about it, and they know what I'm talking about. If the growth of Bitcoin continues exponentially, like most widely useful technologies, it will only be on the order of years, not centuries, not even decades, but individual years before virtually everyone is using it. The standard term for such a rapid change is a singularity. Robin Hanson predicted an economic singularity. Bitcoin, as I will argue, is that singularity. Hat tip to No Agenda Market on the Bitcoin forum for reminding me of Robin Hanson's article. So what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the decentralized digital currency. I say the rather than a because there can only be one. Since decentralized digital currencies rely on computational power to ensure security, the currency with the most computational power is the most secure. If we ever found ourselves with more than one decentralized digital currency, whichever one had more computational resources devoted to it would be the most secure, and thus more people would trust it, and thus more people would use it, and thus it would come to dominate and be the only one. Bitcoin is that currency. Previously, I argued that there could be a market of currencies. However, I now realize that while there can be a market of currencies, there can't be more than one decentralized digital currency. Why is it gaining traction? Bitcoin is useful for all the same reasons that any currency is useful. It is a medium of exchange. The advantage of being decentralized is that you do not have to rely on a third party for security. Thus, Bitcoin is more useful than digital dollars for the same reason that digital dollars are more useful than paper dollars, or paper dollars are more useful than gold. It is just easier to pay people with them. No banks means less headaches, in the same way that no gold means there is less weight you have to lug around. Bitcoin is thus a better answer to a problem humanity has been slowly solving for millennia. How do we remove barriers to payment? There are other advantages to Bitcoin too, besides being more convenient. The fact that no central party controls the supply means no central party can inflate it to redistribute wealth in their favor. No one can debase Bitcoin to pay for a war. Also, since it is deflationary, in the sense that prices reliably go down, it encourages savings because everyone gets richer that way. Exponential growth. Certainly then, Bitcoin is a candidate for an economic singularity because everyone has incentive to use it and it makes the world a better place. That's great in theory, but the reason why it clearly actually is a singularity is because its adoption is, in fact, growing exponentially. There are at least two exponential curves we can see. One is Google Trends, where Bitcoin has crystal clear exponential growth. And another is its value in USD, where again, the growth is clearly exponential. Although these quantities are not the same thing as adoption, they are probably proportional to adoption. 2.5 years ago, there was one user of Bitcoin. We may estimate that there are somewhere between 10 to the 4th or 10 to the 5th users of Bitcoin at present. Thus, in another 2.5 years, there will be somewhere between 10 to the 8th and 10 to the 10th users. Since there aren't even 10 to the 10th people on the planet, we may estimate that adoption will be ubiquitous in approximately 3 years. Attack vectors. This incredibly rapid exponential growth is being powered by the fact that people around the world are quickly learning about it. Thus, the exponential growth can only last until it saturates the world, at which point it will continue growing only at the rate that humanity grows, which is also exponential, but much slower. At present, there is no reason to think the growth will stop before that. There are no credible attack vectors at all. Not even government, the US government or any other, can stop it because the economic incentives are too large. A war on Bitcoin would have exactly as much efficacy as the war on drugs, i.e. none. Bitcoin is susceptible to DOS attacks, but that would only slow its growth, not stop it. The only credible threat to Bitcoin is quantum computers, because Bitcoin relies on classical rather than quantum cryptography. But that threat is many years away. Bitcoin will be ubiquitous by then. What will happen? Bitcoin will take over as the currency of the internet. It will also take over as a store of value. Why earn a measly, less than inflation interest rate in a savings account when you can have steady appreciation of value if you just keep your money in Bitcoin? People will spend less and save more because they know if only they do that, they will be richer in the future. Companies will no longer produce things of no value because no one will buy them. The world will become more efficient because there will be less waste. Everyone will realize how much they lose by spending money on valueless things. There will be a more equitable distribution of wealth because no one can inflate, or to use a less charitable term, counterfeit Bitcoin at their whim. Bitcoin will also take over any fiat currencies that inflate too rapidly. Think Zimbabwe, Argentina, or any other country that presently has or will have a rapidly inflating currency. Central banks will be under enormous pressure to stabilize their currencies or become obsolete. Many banks will collapse, many fiat currencies will become worthless. Probably all fiat currencies will become worthless eventually, because it is only a matter of time before the central banks fall into the temptation of inflating their currencies just a bit too fast. How to proceed? Since Bitcoin appreciates in value very rapidly during the singularity phase, you should convert all of your liquid assets to Bitcoin as quickly as possible. Do not keep any cash, savings, or checking beyond what you need to pay for goods and services that cannot yet be paid for with Bitcoin. The more things you can buy with Bitcoin, the more Bitcoin you should keep. Stop wasting money on excessively expensive meals, televisions, cars, and anything else that loses value quickly or instantly. Instead, put your money into Bitcoin. You will be much richer that way. You may think having less stuff is less fun, but actually, the pleasure of financial freedom far, far outweighs any losses. During the singularity phase, you should also take out loans to buy Bitcoin, since Bitcoin appreciates far more rapidly than interest on any fiat currency loan. When Bitcoin gets near saturation, which is the end of the singularity, you should pay off the loans, because at the point, the rate of appreciation will probably be a lot closer to the interest on the loans, and you may not be able to reliably earn money that way anymore. You may also be tempted to convert other assets to Bitcoin. If you're invested in anything that is likely to be Bitcoin unfriendly, like a bank, it will be wise to convert those assets into Bitcoin. However, if you're invested in companies that actually produce value, those companies will thrive after the singularity, so it is not necessarily a good idea to convert those assets to Bitcoin. If you own assets where the ownership of those assets is certified by a country that is likely to collapse after the singularity, such as if you owned land in a country where the currency is rapidly inflating, you should consider converting those assets to Bitcoin or risk losing it when your country's government collapses. If you own a business, you should start accepting Bitcoin as quickly as possible to maximize your ownership of the Bitcoin economy. If you don't own a business, consider starting a Bitcoin business. See my previous post to learn more about Bitcoin startups. Conclusion. The economy is going to change very dramatically in a matter of 3 or so years. You are likely to be doing a significant amount, if not all, of your economic activity in Bitcoin very soon. The change will be as dramatic as, say, computing or the internet, except that it will happen much faster. The change will be for the better, since it is more convenient to use Bitcoin than fiat currencies for digital payments. Fiat currencies may stick around if they do not hyperinflate. They will probably still be useful for buying coffee. The most interesting change is that we will all become more motivated and productive, since we will see very clearly how our work ethic affects how rich we are. And the world as a whole will be significantly more efficient, since it will be extremely difficult to finance huge wastes of money like wars. Personally, I have invested most of my savings into Bitcoin, and am in the process of figuring out precisely how much more it is wise to invest. I have not yet taken out any loans to buy Bitcoin, because that decision is too hard to swallow. I may yet do it if I can stomach it. Folvinge did. I have also begun producing Bitcoin businesses, which I am hoping will support me after I graduate. My Bitcoin savings alone will actually probably be enough to support me, but I'll be richer if I work too. Most of the other ideas I had about what to do with my life after graduation have gone into the toilet. I'll probably do something with Bitcoin. In the future, books that summarize the history of money will have a line that says, "And then came Bitcoin." It is the economic singularity, and we are living in it now. Holy fucking shit. No matter how many times I reread this, I am fucking baffled at how accurate, how incredibly prescient, and how spot on this kid is. Like, what the actual fuck? It's like you're reading something that was written in 2019, 2020, 2021. Like, what the fuck? You know, the only part that I guess was a little bit hyperbolous, I guess, or that he was kind of off the mark was the level of adoption and the exponential rate, you know. So I guess that reminds me a little bit about how people, you know, take the exponentials and they map them out, and then, you know, they kind of don't take into account that human beings are quite complex, and nothing really, really, really grows that exponentially that quickly. So things do take time. In particular, I guess with Bitcoin, is that there's so many enemies, there's so many forces that, you know, want to hold on to the money printer button, right? That is the most important power lever on the face of the planet. So there are central banks, there are governments, there are all sorts of stuff in the way that Bitcoin needs to defeat, alongside all of the fucking shitcoins that, you know, Bitcoin sort of needs to rise above. There's a whole mountain of things that Bitcoin needs to defeat. And I mean, it is the biggest marketplace on the planet. But man, I just want to kind of go through a couple of things, you know, that he mentioned. Is, you know, what I mean, he opens up with this idea of I say thee rather than a, because there can only be one. I mean, this guy is like basically the first Bitcoin maxi, maybe after Hal Finney and Satoshi. Like, he fucking nailed it. And he makes the argument there that the one with the most hash rate, effectively with the most compute, is going to be the primary one. But he also mentioned in there, he's like, look, I previously argued that there could be a market of currencies, but now I realize that there can only be one decentralized digital currency. And maybe what he's referring to there is kind of the genesis of Bitcoin and the immaculate conception of Bitcoin, the fact that it was released in a way that can't be reproduced. And what's interesting here, it's, so that's June 4th, 2011. I believe Satoshi may have still been around. I'm off the top of my head, I think Satoshi's last message was November 2011. So this is, I mean, still, you know, he didn't even have the benefit of seeing Satoshi disappear. Or even if Satoshi disappeared around this time, still didn't have the benefit of knowing with any certainty that Satoshi would have disappeared and that immaculate conception would have existed. So, I mean, that is fucking mind-blowing in and of itself, right? So there's that first part. I mean, next we've got the why is Bitcoin gaining traction? And I mean, he obviously nails this, but he hits the inflation piece and the fact that you can't debase it. And he finishes this little section with, it encourages savings because everyone gets richer that way. So this is the whole meme that people like Pierre Richard, etc., have like popularized, and particularly Seyfedin and all of that sort of stuff. All of the Austrian people that have been pushing this recently, you know, we've basically pushed the meme that a deflationary money, and he nails the deflationary definition here as well, in the sense that prices reliably go down. So he doesn't think of it in terms of Bitcoin is deflationary because, you know, people are losing it. He actually transcends that point, because that point is stupid. The real deflationary nature of Bitcoin is the fact that it is fixed, and that goods and services priced in Bitcoin will continue to fall in relation to the purchasing power of Bitcoin. And he fucking nails it here. Again, like, here we are more than 10 years later, more than a decade later, talking about the same things, basically rehashing the same points. And yes, we're reinforcing it. And yes, we're, you know, getting the message out further and further and further. But to read it here from a kid who's clearly not even graduated yet, once again, absolutely, absolutely fucking mind-blowing. This next section, the exponential growth piece, where he talks about two trends in particular, obviously Google Trends and the value in US dollars. Now, I mean, the mistake that is made here is extrapolating that exponential curve, as I said earlier, out further. He notes here that in another 2.5 years, which would have been, what, mid-2013-14, basically everybody on the planet would be using it. It would be ubiquitous. Now, Bitcoin is obviously not there yet. I mean, the amount of people who have probably heard and know about Bitcoin might almost be ubiquitous. I mean, at least I'd say half the planet, if not a little bit more, have heard about it. In terms of actual adoption understanding here, I mean, I guess what this kid basically underestimated was the predisposition for the lemmings to want to maintain their status quo and maintain slavery, right? I was on a panel the other day with Jimmy and Katie the Russian and Parker, and I mentioned in there, and I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast in the past, but what we all underestimated, like if you asked me 3 years ago, sorry, even longer, let's say 3.5 years ago, if you said, Alex, people are going to be going to restaurants, and in order to go there, they're going to need to show their papers and wear a face diaper. And I would have told you, get the fuck out of here. Nobody is that pathetic to lower their, you know, to kind of like discard their dignity and degrade themselves to that point that they would actually, you know, do that to walk into a restaurant. They're just not going to go. The fucking restaurants will go bankrupt. And clearly, I was fucking wrong, that, you know, the number of lemmings that exist on the planet far exceeds the number of humans. And, you know, we've had these people over the last 2.5 years that we've seen behave like complete fucking mindless automatons. So I would say that's a big reason why we don't see ubiquitous quote-unquote adoption, alongside all the things that I mentioned earlier. Bitcoin has way more fucking enemies than the internet, than computing, than anything has ever had, because the money is the most important technology. It is the substrate of civilization. It is the fucking ultimate power lever. And whoever has their button on that, or whoever has their hand on that lever, runs the show. So they're, you know, we're going to have to pry their hands off that. And I mean, we're doing it. And, you know, reading things like this inspires me once again and makes me realize how much on the right track we actually are. I love his section in the attack vectors piece, where he says, there are no credible attack vectors at all. Not even the government can stop it, because the economic incentives are too large. Once again, fucking spot on, absolutely nails it. And he uses the, you know, the war on Bitcoin would have exactly as much efficacy as the war on drugs, i.e. none. And he nails this so well, because this is the core of the defense that we've been using when people ask us about, you know, will Bitcoin be hit by the government. It's like the economic incentives are structured such that you're better off to pay to play than pay to attack. And that's happening, and Bitcoin is seeping in. It's actually hitting the exact point. Like, Bitcoin is emerging in the exact way he's described here. He's just got his timeline wrong, that's all. And I mean, it reminds me of the classic saying, right, is I can tell you what but not when, or I can tell you when but not what, right? And obviously the latter being pointless. And he's hit on what here perfectly. It's just the timing thing. And I don't think anybody would have ever been able to predict anything about the Bitcoin timeline, particularly about the world timeline and what we've seen over the last couple of years. You know, he does make the point about Bitcoin and quantum computing, but he also makes the point that, you know, that's many years away. And again, that is a contentious topic. I think people completely misunderstand quantum computing. And I mean, in particular, quantum has nothing to do with the hash rate. If anything, it'll help increase the hash rate. But that's so far fucking out that it doesn't even matter, because ASICs will kick quantum computers' assholes with respect to SHA-256 anyway. There may be some problem with private public key cryptography, but once again, that is a problem we'll solve and we'll move into, and this is where things like multisig, etc. help. The next piece, I mean, once again, he nails it. So what will happen? Bitcoin will take over as the currency of the internet. It will also take over as a store of value. Why earn a measly less than inflation interest rate in a savings account when you can have a steady appreciation of value if you just keep your money in Bitcoin? Not only was he the OG maximalist, but the OG fucking hodler right there in that statement. I mean, you know, this was probably one of my favorite sections of the whole piece, is just this idea that he drives the saving, drives the store of value, and drives this idea that, I mean, he's talking about time preference here, basically, is that we're going to start shifting on a Bitcoin standard towards a world of quality over quantity. When people start to actually have savings that appreciate in value, people start to think more about what they spend their money on. We start to reduce waste. See, he's got a fucking line in here that's perfect. The world will become more efficient because there will be less waste. Everyone will realize how much they lose by spending money on valueless things. Man, this is like a billion out of 10, like home run. Like, this is the home run of home runs in how it's described it here. And it's absolutely spot on. When I think about the stuff that I was writing in 2019 and 2020, like, it was this kid was 10 years ahead of me. It's still mind-boggling as I'm going through this. So, I mean, you know, there's another beautiful line in here. There will be a more equitable distribution of wealth because no one can inflate, or, to use a less charitable term, counterfeit Bitcoin at their whim. Once again, points to the exact thing that we are all here raving on about and talking about with respect to Bitcoin is that you remove the capacity for anyone to have the lever on that, and you start to get an organic distribution of wealth based upon competence, based upon work ethic, based upon actual value adding in the society, not leeching and stealing because you can do so by virtue of the fact that you've got your hand on the monetary spigot. Man, this is like, he's hit so many points here. The savings point, the point about time preference and valuing the things we buy, having our savings and the product of our labor, the fruits of our labor, appreciate in purchasing power over time, and the fact that wealth will redistribute. I mean, these are all linked, but he just, I mean, two paragraphs, nailed it. Then he's got the how to proceed section. And I mean, once again, the timing is slightly off, but he was spot on. Stop wasting money on excessively expensive meals, television, cars. You know, today we would include chairs and everything else. Instead, put your money into Bitcoin. He just, man, you know, take out a loan to buy Bitcoin since Bitcoin appreciates far more rapidly than interest on any fiat currency loan. Once again, nailed it. He was doing the Michael Saylor playbook 10 years before Michael Saylor even touched it. I mean, I hope this kid stacked a shitload of Bitcoin, because this foresight and this level of prescience deserves him having one of the largest stacks on the planet. I mean, he goes into, you know, things like you should own productive assets and stuff like that, and that's fine. Like, you know, of course, particularly based on his whole thesis here is that, you know, once we reach the singularity point, businesses are still going to be adding value and they're going to be actually acquiring Bitcoin. There is a piece here that he said, yes, you should start accepting, if you own a business, you should start accepting Bitcoin as quickly as possible to maximize your ownership of the Bitcoin economy. And this is such a powerful point once again. And I mean, for me, it took me years to get to this understanding, but think of Bitcoin as an economic territory that is fixed, kind of like land in a sense. And what we're all out there doing is we're trying to acquire as much territory on the Bitcoin landscape as possible. And that's what he's talking about here. And man, to hear that written in 2011 by some youngster is, once again, mind-blowing. So anyway, to conclude it, the piece that I wanted to say earlier is that he makes a mention that, you know, the world will be measuring everything in Bitcoin. And he was right in some sense in that you've got people like me, like Gigi, like everyone listening to this podcast, to this episode, to this show in general, and all the other crazy Bitcoiners. I mean, we are already at that point. Like, we've reached, on an individual level, singularity. So, and we're kind of living in our own singularity because we measure our wealth in Bitcoin. We measure in sats. We're exiting into Bitcoin. And there's none of this idea where we're, you know, measuring our net worth in dollars and how much Bitcoin I have and it's one of my, you know, assets in my fucking portfolio. Get the fuck out of here. We're measuring everything in Bitcoin. So we've kind of reached that singularity. And I guess, you know, the only one flaw in this entire thing is the timing. And I guess the more cascading nature of what the singularity of Bitcoin is going to look like. So anyway, I mean, I just hope you guys listening to this are as mind blown as I am listening to this, because this is just one of those pieces that I love reading the old stuff. That there was that Gwern article as well, which I think was like a 2012 one, which also nailed it. And it was kind of like talking about how, you know, the less Bitcoin changes, the better. So it was kind of like the OG version of hardcore, so-called closed-minded maxis who don't want to change anything about Bitcoin. And I mean, this is the OG hodler case. This is the OG time preference case. This is the OG Bitcoin increases you know, the basically the ETF on humanity case. This is the wastage case. Bitcoin fixes the world in that sense. This is the, man, so many pieces here. He also mentions, I'll pop this in the show notes anyway, but there's some further reading. So by Eric Blair, written on June 3rd, 2011, New Decentralized Currency Stimulating Underground Barter Economy. I think I'm going to go through and read all of these, to be honest. By Joel Bowman, June 3rd, An Emerging Free Market Currency, May 29th, 2011, by CS702, On the Potential Adoption and Price Appreciation of Bitcoin in the Long Run. Fuck, man, there's some juicy shit in here. I'm going to go back and read these. Kevin Carson, May 20th, 2011, Bitcoin More Important Than You Realize. Stan Stolnecker, May 20, 2011, same date. Bitcoin, Venn, and the End of Currency. Then there's Dominic Basulto, May 18th, What Happens When Anonymous Gets a Bank. And then Robert Tersek, May 17th, Is Bitcoin the WikiLeaks of Monetary Policy? So I'm going to go through and read all of these in the coming weeks. I think that it's going to be a great use of my time and a great opportunity for you guys to get some Bitcoin history and to also just be awed about how right some of these early people are and what we're going to look like 10 years from now, I guess, because here we are parroting and talking about the exact same thing. So I will I'll wrap it up here. By the time you're listening to this show, I think we will be just about ready to launch the Uncommunist Manifesto on Amazon, actually. So if you can keep an eye out on that, what I would love, and this is my ask to all the listeners, is Mark and I really put some effort into this book. We're going to land on some pretty sizable podcasts. We're going for like Ben Shapiro and Michaela Peterson and all sorts of kind of like libertarian shows and kind of conservative shows and all of that. And we really want to get the book out as far as wide. So as far and as wide as possible. So if you can help us by doing one thing for, I think, about 12 or 24 hours, we haven't decided yet. When we launch the book, we're going to put it on Kindle for 99 cents. And what we're asking in return is if you can just go in there, it's a dollar, buy it and leave a verified review. So from your Amazon account, leave a review, you know, 4 or 5 stars, whatever you think. I mean, if you think it's a piece of shit, you know, maybe don't leave a review. But ideally, please leave us a review. If we get somewhere of the order of like 50 to 100 reviews, and every single one counts. So please, if you're listening to this, don't think, oh, you know, someone else will do it. So please, if you can go on there, jump on. It'll be August the 1st. You get it for 99 cents. Leave a review. That'll push us up into the bestseller list. If we get anywhere between 50 to 100, we will hit the bestseller list, probably in the economics or the politics section of Amazon. And this, the message will get out there much, much wider. So I ask you, if you're a fan of mine or if you've been listening to any of my stuff for whatever, like, this is the best way you can give me some support. So anyway, I'll quit the rambling there. The only other announcement is that the Bitcoin Times Edition 3 is going to be the first print that comes out. And man, with the new logo and everything that we've done there, it looks absolutely gorgeous. We're about to send it to print as of when I'm recording this, actually. So it will be available for purchase by the end of August. And I will have some copies with me at BitBlock Boom. So if you do find yourself in Texas for BitBlock Boom, come see me. We're going to do a bit of a signing and a bit of an event with myself, Jimmy Song, Eric Kaysen, Jeff Booth, and Parker Lewis, which are basically all the writers. The only one we're missing is Giacomo. I'll probably bring some with me, ideally, if I end up at Baltic Honey Badger, and then you'll get an opportunity to get Giacomo to sign his article, which is in Bitcoin Times Edition 3. So anyway, they're the two things. Would really, once again, love your support on the Uncommunist Manifesto. To be notified when we go live, just chuck your email in uncommunist.com. You can unsubscribe later if you want, but you know, that's a good way to be prompted when the thing lands so that you can jump in there and give us a hand. So once again, thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm going to go through and read some more of these. I'll flesh out which ones I think are really good or not. And yeah, we'll continue with some incredible Bitcoin history. Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast.
Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read the new tweet and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating plague that is consuming our world.